Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we'll have a wrap-up on those massive No Kings protests held in San Diego County over the weekend, from downtown San Diego to communities across East County. Then, hear about an impending strike at several major grocery store chains following a union vote. All major Jewish groups in San Diego County are boycotting this year's Pride Parade over objections to an anti-Semitic speaker who has promoted the elimination of Israel. San Diego's newly appointed bishop is taking a stand for immigrants, joining migrants this week at the courthouse downtown where ICE agents have been arresting immigrants showing up for their immigration hearings. A union leader arrested in the Los Angeles protests against immigration roundups has been freed on bail, but progressive leaders are denouncing charges filed against him. Long-awaited improvements to the Casa de Ora business community are finally moving forward thanks to a county grant, and we'll have details on our show today. On People Power, hear about efforts to help Thomas Weller, known as the San Diego Highwayman, for helping stranded motorists through the years. A GoFundMe site has been set up to help Weller, who faces health challenges and major repairs needed to his El Cajon home. Plus, hear about a new VFW center coming to Campo, which has twice as many veterans per capita than California statewide, and about a formerly homeless Vietnam veteran leading those efforts. The San Diego Union-Tribune newspaper is drawing criticism for firing its longtime editorial section editor after refusing to run an editorial on immigration enforcement. Five bills by local state Senator Brian Jones have been passed unanimously by the state Senate and now advance to the Assembly, including bills to make it harder to place sexually violent predators in neighborhoods. From California News Service, hear about new compostable packaging efforts in California. Then from Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories, including controversy over President Trump's military parade honoring the U.S. Army's 250th anniversary and his own 79th birthday. The small crowd size at that parade compared to an estimated 5 million people who turned out at No Kings rallies nationwide. Proposed cuts to veterans' benefits, as well as the latest on missile strikes exchanged between Israel and Iran. Former La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid has passed away, and we'll reflect on his life and legacy on our show today. Plus, hear about a recall of eggs due to salmonella, and from California News Service, how some California colleges and universities are taking steps to address hunger on campuses. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. At least 60,000 people participated in No Kings protests in downtown San Diego on June 14th, according to the San Diego Police Department. Local organizers estimate even more, around 80,000. In addition, thousands more protested at No Kings events in other local communities, including East County, with around 1,000 in El Cajon, several hundred in Ramona, and nearly 100 braving 95-degree heat in Borrego Springs. Photos posted on social media show numerous other rallies across San Diego County, with hundreds more at each of those. In El Cajon, protesters lined both sides of Fletcher Parkway from one end of Parkway Plaza Regional Shopping Mall to the other. Chants of "This is what democracy looks like" filled the air. The majority of vehicles driving past honked and waved in support, startling in a city with an all-Republican city council. Tables at the rally were set up to gather signatures on petitions to recall El Cajon Councilman Phil Ortiz, who cast the swing vote in support of a measure allowing the city's police to cooperate with federal immigration officials. Also present were organizers of a recall effort seeking to oust Grossmont Union High School District trustees who voted to fire dozens of teachers, counselors, and librarians. El Cajon protesters included numerous signs critical of the president's actions perceived as undemocratic and unconstitutional, as well as anti-ICE. A veteran with a sign proclaimed, "I fought for freedom, not fascism," and a woman whose sign read, "Not a paid protester, I hate Trump for free," was also out in the streets. San Diego Police Department in a media release praised protesters for remaining peaceful and respectful in San Diego, also voicing appreciation to event organizers and community leaders. As of Saturday afternoon, there were no arrests and no reports of property damage or injuries related to the protest, SDPD confirmed. Their press release adds, the San Diego Police Department remains committed to protecting the rights of all individuals to assemble and exercise their freedom of speech. We thank our residents for their collaboration and the strong sense of shared responsibility that made this a safe day for our city. The No Kings protests drew many millions of people nationwide Saturday, the same day that President Donald Trump held a military parade estimated to cost up to $45 million to honor the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Army, also celebrating Trump's 79th birthday. The military parade was sparsely attended, with far more millions turning out at No Kings protests nationwide. Allison Gill, award-winning podcaster and a speaker at the San Diego rally, says this is the kind of vanity parade we would expect to see in Russia or North Korea, not in a democracy, referring to Trump's military parade. Wendy Gellinter, one of the event organizers, said, no matter what the parade is called, democracy is under attack. Donald Trump and his allies are dismantling democratic institutions to consolidate power and money at the expense of the rest of us. Specifically, these rallies called for protection for democratic institutions, civil rights, and the rule of law, an end to efforts to centralize executive powers as laid out in Project 2025, transparency, accountability, and truth over chaos, cruelty, and corruption, and elected leadership and good governance that serves the people, not personal power, personal enrichment, or spectacle. Misty O'Healy, with Indivisible 49, another event organizer, says it's unconscionable to spend this kind of money when the veterans in our area are being stripped of their benefits to reduce government spending, and budgets are being slashed for health services, food programs for hungry children, and vital medical research at San Diego area universities. Brian Lafferty, a local labor leader, carried a sign at the downtown protest reading, "Real American patriots don't want to be ruled by kings. We literally started a revolution over this 249 years ago." On Facebook, he posted, "Exhaustion from four straight days of contract ratification did not stop me from marching in today's No Kings protest downtown. I love my country too much to allow fascism to take over it, and it was a great feeling to see tens of thousands of fellow San Diegans who feel the same way show up along with me." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
More than 90% of voting United Food and Commercial Workers Local 135 members at Ralph's, Albertsons, Vons, and Pavilion stores across San Diego County have authorized a strike if necessary, according to the union. The vote last week came amid ongoing contract negotiations between the union and the grocery store parent companies Kroger and Albertsons. The union, which represents more than 13,000 workers throughout San Diego and Imperial counties, accuses the companies of unfair labor practices, including surveillance, intimidation, and retaliation during the months-long bargaining process. Local 135 President Todd Walters says, "The strike authorization is not just about a vote, it's a mandate. We will not be pushed around or silenced. This vote shows that we are strong, united, and ready to do whatever it takes to win the fair contract you deserve." The bargaining committee has met with the companies 18 times since February, union officials say. But progress has stalled over issues such as staffing, wages, and equity, Times of San Diego reports. Cammy Fulton, a Ralph's worker and bargaining team member, says, "I've been in every bargaining session. The companies aren't taking us seriously. But this vote proves that we are serious, and we're not backing down." The final scheduled bargaining sessions are set for June 25th through 27th. More than 100,000 union grocery workers nationwide authorized a strike against Kroger and Albertsons last week. If called, it could become the largest grocery strike in modern history, disrupting operations during the industry's peak summer season, according to Los Cerritos Community News. In a statement provided to CBS 8, a spokesperson for Albertsons, Vons, and Pavilion said, "We respect the rights of workers to engage in collective bargaining and remain committed to negotiating in good faith to reach an agreement that is fair to our employees, good for our customers, and allows our company to remain competitive. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Many local Jewish organizations from across San Diego County that have traditionally been a part of the annual San Diego Pride event will not be joining this year. Jewish community leaders say that because the Pride Festival chose musical artist Kehlani to be a headliner at the annual July Festival, there will be no official organized Jewish presence. According to a media release, the groups and synagogues that will not be participating in San Diego Pride include the Jewish Federation of San Diego, ADL San Diego, Lawrence Family Jewish Community Center, Temple Emmanuel of San Diego, Congregation Dor Hadash, Congregation Beth Israel of San Diego, Congregation Tifereth Israel Synagogue, and Temple Adat Shalom of Poway. It also includes the festival's current volunteer director of medical operations and assistant director of medical operations, Dr. Jennifer Anger, and Eliyahu Cohen Mizrahi. Both individuals are Jewish and have also stepped away from their roles with Pride. Heidi Gantwerk, president and CEO of Jewish Federation of San Diego, wrote on her Facebook page on June 6th, "I've loved being a part of San Diego Pride, but this year I stand with our entire Jewish community and will not be participating. This is a painful choice, especially for the 16% of Jewish households with at least one member of the LGBTQIA community. But SD Pride has made a choice, and unless they deplatform Kehlani, our Jewish community is neither safe nor welcome." San Diego Pride 2025 runs through July 16th through July 20th. This year's theme is Unbreakable Pride, Unshakable Power, honoring the enduring spirit of the LGBTQIA community and its allies. Kehlani, who is scheduled to perform July 19th, has repeatedly amplified violent anti-Semitic rhetoric, resulting in all participating Jewish organizations and synagogues withdrawing from the 2025 event, citing safety concerns. Even groups which have marched with, volunteered for, or supported Pride for years. This decision came after the Finest Community Coalition released a statement last month signed by nearly 36 Jewish organizations, including Federation, urging San Diego Pride to reconsider giving Kehlani a platform. The Federation says that by moving forward with Kehlani, San Diego Pride is communicating to LGBTQIA Jewish San Diegans that they are unwelcome and unsafe at this year's event. Recent events have shown that when anti-Semitic rhetoric is normalized and given a platform, it can all too easily lead to violence against Jews, such as in recent domestic terror attacks in Boulder, Colorado and Washington, D.C. Both acts of violence were carried out by assailants who echoed similar hateful rhetoric as Kehlani, Federation officials say. Gantwerk said Pride should be a celebration of inclusion and solidarity, not a platform for divisive voices that incite hatred and violence. As we've seen in D.C. and Boulder, when anti-Semitism is ignored or tolerated, it fuels a culture that leads to violence. We cannot wait for a tragedy to strike our own community again before we act. Singer and songwriter Kehlani has emerged as one of the most outspoken voices in the music industry in support of Palestinians during Israel's military campaign in Gaza, which began following the attacks by the terrorist group Hamas on southern Israel on October 7, 2023. Kehlani, who uses them-they pronouns, has consistently used their platform to call attention to the suffering of civilians in Gaza, urging fans and fellow artists to speak out. The music video for Kehlani's song, Next to You, features the words, "Long live the Intifada," a phrase that can imply violence toward the Jewish community. Kehlani has also shared posts and made statements online that have been interpreted as expressing anti-Israel and potentially anti-Semitic views. Kehlani has shared a map on social media that illuminates Israel and was written that Zionists are the scum of the earth. Zionism is a movement rooted in the belief that Jews are a nation and have a right to self-determination and a national home in their ancestral homeland. In 2023, Kehlani joined a group of public figures in signing an open letter demanding a ceasefire and the lifting of Israel's blockade on the Gaza Strip. The advocacy continued in 2024, with Kehlani taking to social media platforms to amplify Palestinian voices and call on fellow musicians to take a public stand and show solidarity with Gazans. Kehlani has pushed back at claims of expressing anti-Semitic and anti-Israel sentiments. But Nicole Marie Ramirez, a co-founder of San Diego Pride, notes that Kehlani has even called for the deaths of all Zionists and that the Jewish community has had enough of this anti-Semitism, noting that the hate crimes against Jewish community in San Diego have been increasing. She made those remarks in early June at Temple Emmanuel during a town hall meeting about Kehlani's appearance at Pride. On social media, Murray Ramirez later noted that the synagogue in Del Cerro was one of the first religious organizations to march in our parade when so many wouldn't almost 30 years ago. As for Kehlani's appearance at the coming Pride Festival, Murray Ramirez says, This is not about freedom of speech. This is about a hate speech. The board of directors at San Diego Pride issued a statement recognizing the Jewish community's choice to avoid the event while defending the group's entertainment pick. "We respect our local Jewish community's decision not to participate in San Diego Pride's programming this year," the statement reads. "Each member of our community must make their own decision about attending this year's events, but we hope everyone will come out as a sign of solidarity for our queer community." The statement continues, "San Diego Pride does not endorse or adopt the political positions of any individual performer. Rather, we honor the value of artistic integrity, the importance of free expression, and the role that artists play in shaping culture, challenging systems, and amplifying voices while respecting each other's differences." San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria, the city's first openly gay mayor, says he will not be attending this year's Pride event. In a letter to Kristen Flickinger, interim executive director at San Diego Pride, which was shared with the members of the media, Mayor Gloria explains that his office has received an overwhelming number of calls and emails regarding Kehlani, whom he says has used regrettable and controversial rhetoric on social media about the Jewish community. "San Diego Pride is a cherished celebration of inclusion, progress, and resilience of our LGBTQ community. It should be a space where everyone, regardless of background, belief, or identity, feels safe and welcome," Gloria says, voicing deep concerns for the safety of all attendees at this year's Pride Parade and Festival. The mayor voiced concern that Kehlani's performance may lead to demonstrations, adding, "I will not accept lawlessness or chaos at the parade or festival. The safety of all attendees and nearby residents is paramount." He cited a need to work with the San Diego Police Department to ensure robust safety plans are in place, as well as reassuring presence throughout the entire event. Gloria also reached out to the Finest Community Coalition, a group founded earlier this year to unite Jewish and non-Jewish leaders, organizations, and community members to combat anti-Semitism and promote unity in the region. In a letter to the group, Gloria writes that he has been assured by San Diego Pride that they will be increasing security and implementing new safety procedures. The mayor adds that San Diego Pride has revised its contract with its headliner to prevent Kehlani from engaging in political speech. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Federal immigration officials have begun arresting immigrants and refugees at San Diego's federal courthouse, denying them due process at hearings that could have granted them legal status in the U.S. Now, Bishop Michael Pham and two local auxiliary bishops have announced that on World Refugee Day, June 20th, they will stand in solidarity with migrants making court appearances. They are also calling on all diocese parishes to join them and celebrate a mass devoted to immigrants. Pham, who came to America as a refugee from Vietnam himself at age 8, understands the hardships that refugees and migrants face. His family fled Da Nang to Malaysia, then escaped on a rice barge with no food or water, huddled among dead bodies before finding freedom. He is the first bishop appointed by Pope Leo XIV, who has voiced strong support for refugees and immigrants. Bishop Pham signed the letter to parish leaders, along with auxiliary bishops Ramona Bejarano and Philippe Pulido. Their letter states, "We know that migrants and refugees find themselves in the difficult predicament of being called to appear, which is what the government asks of them, and then being given orders for expedited removal from our country. The faith leaders voice hope that their presence may improve how the migrants are treated, but acknowledge that it likely will not change the outcome. The faith leaders plan to hold a press conference after the court appearances so that, in their words, the clear message that people of faith stand with immigrants and refugees can be delivered to the broader public." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The union leader federal agents detained during an immigration protest in Los Angeles earlier this month is well known to California's Democratic leadership from his years of activism in and out of the Capitol. That's one reason so many leading Democrats have jumped to his defense, CalMatters reports. David Huerta, the 58-year-old president of the statewide janitors union and of Service Employees International Union California, was arrested by federal agents outside of a Los Angeles garment warehouse, where protesters were gathered to watch and oppose an apparent workplace immigration raid. Denouncements poured in quickly. Governor Gavin Newsom issued this statement, "David Huerta is a respected leader, a patriot, and an advocate for working people. No one should ever be harmed for witnessing government action." Though Huerta has since been released on bail, federal prosecutors are charging him with impeding a federal agent, which carries a prison sentence of up to 6 years. The union maintains that he was peacefully protesting. U.S. Senators Alex Padilla and Adam Schiff, along with Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer, wrote a letter to the Department of Homeland Security calling for a review of his arrest. At SEIU California, Huerta leads a union with nearly 750,000 members that is a heavyweight in statewide politics. It represents a wide range of workers, from nurses and university researchers to janitors and public sector employees. It's a major donor to Democratic candidates. The union's recent victories include a $25 minimum wage for all workers at healthcare facilities. Lorena Gonzalez, leader of the California Labor Federation, says, "Everyone knows him. He's been around for a very long time in the movement. We sounded the alarm and everybody stood up." Huerta is also vice president of the California Labor Federation's board. Huerta is a U.S. citizen, his grandparents immigrated from Mexico to work in the fields, and his father was a Teamsters union member. He's been organizing janitors since as early as 1990s, led historic strikes in Los Angeles over wages, and has been involved with immigration politics for just as long. When federal authorities, working then under the now defunct Immigration and Naturalization Service, swept through California's airports in a post-9/11 crackdown on immigration janitors and baggage handlers who were employed illegally, Huerta called for reforms that would allow more workers to get their papers. As the leader of the SEIU United Service Workers West, which represents janitors and security guards across California, he's emphasized English classes and citizenship for members. In 2016, his union successfully pushed for the state to pass training and stronger harassment protections for janitors who often face sexual assault working alone on the night shift. California Senate President Pro Tem Mike McGuire criticized Immigration and Customs Enforcement for what he calls fascist tactics. U.S. Senator Adam Schiff calls the union leader's arrest part of a larger campaign of intimidation by the White House. Federal authorities accuse Huerta of obstructing agents, though the circumstances of his arrest remain blurry. Video posted on social media by Assemblymember Isaac Bryan, a Culver City Democrat, appears to show agents in law enforcement vests pushing Huerta to the ground as protesters cry out nearby. Bill Asaley, the U.S. attorney in Los Angeles, wrote on social media that Huerta had deliberately obstructed federal agents who had a judicial warrant by blocking their car. Kieran McEvoy, spokesperson for Asaley's office, would not share the warrant, saying only that the agents were targeting employers and businesses believed to not be in compliance with federal immigration laws. In a criminal complaint, a Department of Homeland Security special supervisor agent accuses Huerta of coordinating with other protesters, effectively preventing law enforcement vehicles from entering or exiting the premises through the gate to execute the search warrant. After treatment in a hospital for injuries sustained during the arrest, Huerta said in a statement released by SEIU California, "Hardworking people and members of our family and our community are being treated like criminals. We all collectively have to object to this madness because this is not justice." The union staged protests in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Sacramento to protest Huerta's arrest. "He represents a union that has a lot of immigrant women," Gonzalez said. "He's a constant and consistent voice for immigrant workers, and he's been at the forefront of fighting for a path to citizenship and to stop deportations and workplace raids." At the warehouse where Huerta was arrested, a crowd of protesters had gathered to watch federal agents at Ambiance Apparel. An immigration raid was also reported at Ambiance's storefront in downtown LA's Garment District. ICE reported that it served 4 search warrants that day, arresting 44 immigrants who were in the U.S. without authorization, all during worksite raids. Though Donald Trump initially pledged to arrest and deport violent criminals, the recent raids in Los Angeles and other major cities make clear that all undocumented immigrants are being targeted for mass deportation, even those who have committed no crimes, have jobs, and are working hard to support their families and be productive community members. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
The County of San Diego is moving into the next phase of the ambitious Campo Road Corridor Revitalization Specific Plan, aimed at transforming the Campo Road Corridor into a safer, more walkable, and vibrant community hub. Backed by a multi-million dollar grant awarded early this year, county personnel, with input from stakeholders, are focusing on public infrastructure improvements, including a more walkable environment, improved safety and connections for pedestrians, cyclists, and drivers, says Audrey Hamilton, project manager with the County Department of Public Works, who led a June 4th Zoom meeting on the latest news for the area. The coming work is expected to bring new life to portions of Camper Road and surrounding streets in the unincorporated area between Spring Valley and La Mesa. There's been more than a decade of discussion and years of tentative plans for revitalizing the main commercial strip and adjacent residential area along Campo Road in Casa de Oro. As part of the Campo Road-specific plan, approved in 2023 by the San Diego County Board of Supervisors and long championed by the Casa de Oro Alliance, the county earlier this year secured a $2.5 million grant through the San Diego Association of Governments Housing Acceleration Program. The SANDAG grant, which began in February and sunsets in April 2026, is funding preliminary engineering and design plans that support the community's specific plan related to long-sought improvements along Campo Road. The grant at its core will support housing by improving neighborhood walkability and safety. It is also supporting outreach and engagement, plus preliminary engineering and design of roundabouts, bicycle, pedestrian, and roadway safety infrastructure. The specific plan covers a 60-acre area centered on Campo Road between Rogers Road and Granada Avenue and serves as the commercial and civic center of the Casa de Oro community within the Valle de Oro community plan area. Campo Road is a central hub for economic and civic activities, providing businesses, schools, and other essential services for Casa de Oro and nearby communities, including Lemon Grove, Spring Valley, and La Mesa. In the Zoom meeting, Hamilton said three public outreach meetings will be scheduled in the future. The project team plans to design the road improvements by next winter, with final plans to be completed at the end of the grant next spring. Any continued needs will have to be funded through future grants or via the county itself. The plan also considers a business improvement district as a potential funding and management mechanism. At the Zoom meeting, Hamilton noted that the county must take a few items into consideration as the team designs the various road improvements, such as location of utilities and privately owned lands. Other improvements could include widening sidewalks and bikeways with buffers, parking lanes, landscape medians, street lighting, planting with trees, three roundabouts, and high visibility crosswalks. County officials also said they are aware of flood issues in the region, so design improvements will also include the review of flood control structures between Kenwood Drive and Granada Avenue. The Board of Supervisors officially adopted the Campo Road Corridor Revitalization Specific Plan in January 2023, but it had been on the minds of residents and community members for decades. Back in 2015, the Casa de Oro Community Alliance was formed by a coalition of residents, business owners, property owners, community planning groups, nearby schools, churches, and other stakeholders, with a mission to enrich and beautify the Casa de Oro area. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Next up, we'll have some national news from Public News Service, and then we'll be back with more local news coverage.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This was an act of targeted political violence. Peaceful discourse is the foundation of our democracy. We don't settle our differences with violence or at gunpoint.
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz says now is a dangerous time given the politically motivated shooting of two state Democratic lawmakers. State Representative Melissa Hortman, State Senator John Hoffman, and their respective spouses were shot over the weekend. Suspect Vance Bolter fled the scene dressed as a police officer after exchanging gunfire with police officers. Law enforcement says they found a hit list of more than 70 names, mostly of Democratic lawmakers, in his car. Bolter's online history paints him as an opponent of abortion and gay rights. Political scientists say violent acts, from the arson attack on the Pennsylvania governor's mansion to Saturday's shooting at a Utah No Kings rally, may mean we're entering an ugly moment. David Schultz of Hamline University says it reminds him of when several leaders were assassinated in the 60s. He says growing social isolation and division can feed conspiracy theories and radicalization.
Falsity travels more rapidly and more deeply than truth, and the relative anonymity or distance of social media also emboldens people to radicalize. Put all that together, that gets us part of the recipe of where we are in our society right now.
President Trump's military parade Saturday marked the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Army, despite fears it could politicize America's traditionally nonpartisan armed forces. The White House says 250,000 people attended, but outside estimates put the number closer to 20,000. Critics point out the parade cost as much as $45 million, mostly because of damage to D.C. streets. A recent poll finds most American adults say it wasn't a good use of funds. Others point to administration cuts to veterans' benefits. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates the GOP budget reconciliation bill would cut benefits by more than $35 billion over a decade. Organizers estimate more than 5 million people participated in the more than 2,000 No Kings protests on the same day. Trump supporters say the president is defending constitutional values and using lawful powers to advance his agenda, but Micah Pulliam of Indiana says she decided to join a march due to concerns about the president's authoritarian behavior.
America hasn't had a king. We rejected kings years and years and years ago, and Trump is acting like a king, like he can make all the decisions and do what he wants. That's not how America works.
One surprise was how many rallies took place in Republican states. Rural West Virginia has strong ties to fossil fuels, and nearly 70% there voted for Trump, but the state's dozen No Kings rallies drew thousands of people. Organizers say Montana held twice that number of events. Rose, who asks to be identified only by her first name, is a co-founder of Missoula Resists, which she says supports science, human rights, and active community building. She says rural Montana is a lot more purple than red.
It is a reflection of the fact that we are independent-minded, and we are willing to say when someone has gone too far and when the government is no longer reflecting the will of the people.
Iran and Israel continue military strikes, killing more than 200 and raising oil prices. Neither side seems ready to stop. Israel says it's reducing Iran's nuclear capability. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Juliet Sanders with East County Magazine's People Power Report. Known as the San Diego Highwayman, El Cajon resident Thomas Weller spent more than 50 years helping nearly 10,000 stranded motorists along freeways across San Diego County. His good deeds have been featured on national TV shows ranging from CBS News to National Public Radio. Now, Weller could use some help of his own. While health issues forced him off the road in 2017, Weller spent decades changing tires, replacing batteries, filling up empty gas tanks, standing watch over drivers and passengers in need, all at no charge. The calling card he always handed out to those whom he helped reads, "Assisting you has been my pleasure. I ask for no payment other than for you to pass on the favor by helping someone in distress that you may encounter." Now 77 years old, Weller has recovered from a stroke nearly 10 years ago and is managing heart issues. He lives with his wife of 30 years, Patty, and their rescue dog, Sandy May, in a house they call Goose Creek Ranch in El Cajon. But the modest home that's more than 50 years old is in need of major repairs, which are cost prohibitive for a couple on fixed incomes. The aging roof leaks in several places, a shower needs to be retrofitted, plus the home has other plumbing challenges and repairs needed. Now the man, who never accepted tips for his help, has reached a tipping point with repair work needed for his own home. A fundraising effort has been set up on GoFundMe. The Help San Diego Highwayman Stay Independent effort aims to raise $45,000, of which just over half has been donated as of our show taping deadline. Weller is often described by people he's helped as an angel. Now some request to pass it on by donating to help him. His blog is filled with stories, such as the woman who thanked him for tying down wayward items in the back of her truck along Interstate 8, or the man who ran into Weller years after Weller had helped him on the road and insisted on paying for his lunch. Weller has plied several trades through the years, including stints as a security guard and as an auto mechanic. He's also battled depression, but he's kept those down moods at a minimum, not by visiting a therapist or via medications, but by traveling around looking for others to assist in their times of need. He says, "I've suffered from depression all my life, and when I get to help somebody, my spirits are lifted." Among his triumphs, Weller recalls a time in the early 1970s keeping a family from being crushed and burned on a southbound Interstate 5 by the S-curves in downtown San Diego. The Good Samaritan says it all started when, as a teenager in Illinois, he was pulled out of a snowbank. His car had crashed into a lonely two-lane highway at night during a fierce winter storm in 1964. Weller recalls, "I said thank you and tried to pay the man that helped me, but he refused to take my money and instructed me to just pass it on to others in need of help. He started doing so at the age of 18, after moving to San Diego, where he began helping stranded motorists. He took on the name the San Diego Highwayman after Charles Kuralt coined that description of him during a feature that ran on CBS in 1996. In his book, Charles Kuralt's American Moments, the newsman said of Weller, "Highwaymen of old were figures to fear, but here's a highwayman to admire." Weller, who has helped to save thousands of motorists whose vehicles have broken down, says he lives by these words, "When life knocks you down, you get back up."
Veterans in Campbell will soon have a new VFW center, thanks to a county grant and help from volunteers led by Kevin Martin, a Vietnam veteran. VFW Post 2080 is moving from its old, dilapidated building to freshly renovated quarters down the block on Sheridan Road at the edge of Camp Lockett. Martin was recently elected commander of the post. Trained by the VA in wellness recovery and PTSD counseling with a specialty in behavioral pharmacology and addiction studies from UC Berkeley, Martin is the force behind the Camp Lockett Veterans Resource Center. He recently received a grant to purchase a mobile home so he can take his services on the road to meet the veteran population where they're at. Campo is home to more vets per capita than the rest of the state, 8.4% in Campo versus 4.1% statewide, according to the census. It's likely that many Campo vets are not even counted because they don't have permanent residences. Martin says these veterans, they fight for us, our families, our rights, adding that returning vets are often treated badly. He adds, "I'm not letting that happen on my watch." Martin does whatever it takes to help fellow vets, giving them rides to doctor appointments in the DMV, assistance with housing, benefits applications, financial education, mental health counseling, signing them up for free cell phones, and setting up mail delivery. He's especially keen on finding and assisting homeless vets because he was once homeless himself after returning from deployment. He says, "When guys get back and they have nowhere to go, they go to the bushes, and that's where I go to find them. You don't sit back at a desk and wait for them to come to you." The nearest full-service Veterans Service office is 50 miles away in El Cajon, and most people whom Martin serves are not able to travel there. When he moved to Campo 3 years ago after retiring from his career at the Palo Alto VA Hospital, he saw a need and he started filling it. He estimates he has helped about 150 people since he arrived. Carol Snyder, a Campo real estate agent who volunteers with Martin at Camp Lockett, says East County doesn't get services like they do in town. There's a huge need out here. Kevin is able to give people hope, she says. He helps them out of his own pocket. The first person Martin helped when he came to town was a former submariner living in a non-functioning box truck in a hot, dusty field. He was addicted to alcohol and disconnected from services. Martin recalls, "The first thing I'm trained to do is a quick street assessment to determine what the most immediate needs are. Then I can start to walk the person through the whole process." Snyder says Martin was able to assist the submariner with applying for VA service-connected disability benefits, and now he gets $3,800 every month. Martin finds quiet and solitude in Campo, with soothing breezes rustling the oaks and wide-open mountain views. He's glad other vets have found their way out there, and he hopes the new VFW will be a welcome getaway from city life, which can be overwhelming for some veterans. It's just an hour from San Diego, he notes. It's remote, but not too far. Campo has a military history dating back to the late 1800s, when cavalry and infantry regiments were garrisoned there to provide protection for the border and the stagecoach line. It was the last U.S. camp for mounted cavalry units. Indeed, Buffalo soldiers were trained and stationed at what became Camp Lockett. Most of the remaining structures were built during World War II, when Italian and German POWs were housed there. Now, Camp Lockett is a San Diego County-designated historical landmark. The new VFW post is in the old Farrier's quarters. As commander of Post 2080, Martin plans to host classes in financial literacy, mental health, how to purchase property, and more. He hopes to train a crew so he can expand his mission. Lieutenant John W. Finn, VFW Post 2080's grand reopening date, will be posted on Facebook soon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A fired San Diego Union Tribune opinion editor is accusing the paper's owners of censorship at its best after she was let go at the same time an editorial was blocked from running. Laura Castañeda announced her layoff on social media on June 13th, tweeting, On the same day, a team editorial at SDUT Opinion on the ICE protests was pulled. My position as deputy editor was suddenly eliminated. Castaneda told Times of San Diego that Frank Pine, executive editor of the Southern California News Group, informed her Thursday evening that her position was eliminated. Southern California News Group, which runs 11 newspapers, is a subsidiary of Denver-based Media News Group, controlled by majority shareholder Alden Global Capital, a privately held hedge fund in New York. Castaneda, a 5-year Union Tribune veteran and president of the local chapter of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, says the editorial was about the protests and ICE raids in Los Angeles and across the country, and quote, how Trump overstepped Governor Newsom with deployments of Marines and National Guard. In an email to Times of San Diego, Castaneda said her firing came as a surprise. Several weeks earlier, she said, employees at a staff meeting were told that no layoffs were expected at the UT. But that night, Castaneda says she was informed by Pine that her position had been eliminated. She says she asked Pine if he was sure this was not in retaliation to an editorial written earlier in the day, which was rejected by publisher Ron Haas, who said it was too one-sided and refused to publish it, according to Castaneda. Editorials, by definition, are opinion pieces that reflect the author's viewpoint, not all viewpoints. Pine insisted the two actions were not related, she said. UT senior editor Laura Sicalo didn't immediately respond to a request for comment from Times of San Diego, which broke the story. Neither did Pine or publisher Haas. The Union Tribune has been a subject of scrutiny for its reputed lack of editorial courage, including a recent failure to run a Sunday Doonesbury cartoon about Trump. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
It's not easy for a Republican legislator to get measures passed by California's liberal legislature, which has a supermajority of Democrats in both houses. But earlier this month, 5 bills authored by Senate Minority Leader Brian Jones, a Republican whose district includes parts of San Diego and East County communities, passed the state Senate with unanimous bipartisan support. The measures, which Jones calls common sense bills, are now under consideration in the state assembly. Each proposal aims to address urgent issues facing Californians, from public safety and insurance coverage to updating outdated state laws. In a statement, Jones says these bills are focused on real problems and offer real solutions, from protecting communities from sexually violent predators to fixing gaps in insurance coverage for mobile homes. I'm proud to have unanimous support in the Senate and look forward to working with my colleagues in the Assembly to get them across the finish line. The 5 bills unanimously passed by the Senate are SB 356, which would include that crime victims and their families can have all evidence considered by the Board of Parole hearings before their perpetrators release, including crime scene photos. SB 379, the SAFE Act, would prevent the secret placement of sexually violent predators in neighborhoods by requiring public safety to be considered and restoring accountability to the state's placement process. SB 380 would implement recommendations from the California State Auditor to improve how sexually violent predators are housed by requiring that the Department of State Hospitals conduct a feasibility study on using transitional housing for SVPs with conditional release. SB 525 would assure that mobile and manufactured homeowners receive equal insurance protection under California's FAIR Plan, including full replacement value, just like standard homeowners now have. And SB 586 would allow electric off-highway motorcycles to be registered and operated legally, improving safety and access for a fast-growing sector of outdoor recreation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
California companies that make compostable packaging materials say their products could make a huge dent in the problem of plastic pollution, but only with changes to state and federal policy. California passed Senate Bill 54 in 2022. It requires single-use packaging and plastic foodware to be either recyclable or compostable by 2032. The issue is with a companion bill, Assembly Bill 1201, which said compostable materials must be certified organic. John Feltz is CEO of Crew Cruz Foam, based in Santa Cruz, making compostable packaging foam from food waste.
The idea that all compostable packaging would have to comply would effectively remove compostable packaging from being viable. The cost, the tracking, making a fully certified organic packaging material is nearly impossible.
The organic requirement is set to go into effect January 1st, but negotiations are underway in Sacramento to delay implementation, a move also supported by the plastics industry. Environmental advocates say plastic waste is choking the planet, disrupting marine ecosystems, and endangering human health. So recycling, reusable containers, and compostable packaging are key. It's estimated that 40% of all plastic produced today is used to make packaging, much of which is used once. Julia Marsh is CEO of Sway, based in San Leandro, which uses seaweed to make flexible packaging.
About 5 trillion bags, wrappers, and pouches are produced every year. 11 million metric tons of plastic enter the ocean every year. That number is expected to triple by 2040 if production rates continue as is.
Advocates would also like the National Organic Program within the U.S. Department of Agriculture to broaden the term organic to include certified compostable materials. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Leaving behind a legacy of public service, longtime La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid passed away at age 90 in his La Mesa home on June 6th, according to his daughter, Lisa Madrid. His leadership shaped the city, earning admiration and respect from residents, businesses, and civic leaders around the region and across the country. Madrid was elected to public office in La Mesa 6 times, including 2 terms as a city council member from 1981 to 1990, and 4 terms as mayor, leading the city for nearly a quarter of a century, including during the city's centennial celebration in 2012. He previously served in the U.S. Marine Corps, including a stint in Korea, then spent 35 years working for Pacific Bell before entering politics. Barry Jantz, retired CEO from the Grossmont Healthcare District and former member of La Mesa City Council, where he served with Madrid for 16 years, says that despite some political differences, that grew into mutual respect and even friendship in more recent years. He was fun to be around and had a larger-than-life personality. There was never any doubt he had a great passion for his community and his fellow citizens. He had a huge heart for La Mesa, and he wasn't shy to vocally stand up and fight for his city. During his time running the city of La Mesa, Madrid also served as chair of the San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, held roles on the League of California Cities, and led the California Council of Governments. His leadership extended to the State Fair Employment and Housing Commission, the Veterans Board, the San Diego Regional Airport Authority, and myriad other groups and organizations. Born in New Mexico in 1934, Madrid moved to La Mesa in 1958 and then embarked on a career in public service that would span more than 3 decades. His political tenure ended in 2014 when Marco Rapostathis won the mayoral vote. Madrid was often critical of Rapostathis and most recently called the current mayor out for issues related to the riots that wreaked havoc in La Mesa in May 2020. In a statement to the media, Rapostathis said, "Art Madrid devoted his life to serving the people of La Mesa. His leadership left a lasting mark on our city. We are grateful for his many years of service and the legacy he leaves behind." Bipartisan tributes to Madrid have been pouring in since his passing. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells says he was impressed by Madrid's fierce commitment to his community. Santee Mayor John Minto says he and Madrid got along well, even with some friendly competition between the two cities over which city was the best. He says Madrid cared deeply about the city and La Mesa and always tried to do the best he could to make La Mesa the best it could be. State Senator Steve Padilla issued this tribute to Madrid. "I had the pleasure to serve on the SANDAG board alongside him for many years, and during that time developed a deep respect for his commitment to his community. He touched generations of La Mesans and San Diegans alike and leaves behind an enduring legacy." State Senator Aquila Weber posted on Facebook, "I am deeply saddened by the passing of former La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid. He was more than a public servant. He was a dear friend, a man of integrity, and someone who always stood up for what was right," Weber said. Weber says Madrid's leadership helped shape the city into what it is today, adding, "I will always remember Art for his courage, his wisdom, and his steady moral compass. His legacy will live on in the community he loves so much." Craig Maxwell, owner of Maxwell's House of Books in the La Mesa Village, had an unsuccessful mayoral bid to unseat Madrid in 2006. The two were fierce rivals for decades, but Maxwell says the two eventually came to terms with their disagreements, found some common ground, and that Madrid was a regular visitor to his shop. His ringtone was "Hail to the Chief," Maxwell says, laughing. He was a confident man. This reporter interviewed Art Madrid many times, over more than two decades. He was a rarity among political leaders, willing to stand up for what he believed was right, even if that meant stirring up controversy or crossing party lines. He was a Republican who took stands to protect the environment, the dignity of homeless people, and to denounce hate speech. He once carried a torch during an equality run across East County for gay rights. As a full-time mayor devoted to his city, he frequently dropped by local businesses or knocked on doors of residents who had written to voice concerns on traffic or other issues. I recall him showing up at my parents' door once when they had written to complain about a traffic concern on their block. He was accessible to the media as well, often calling us with tips and willing to take a phone call and share his views. In a 2014 interview with East County Magazine, he cited passage of a bond measure that resulted in new public buildings, including a police station and library, among his greatest accomplishments, along with accessibility to the public. He told us, "Every weekend I drive through at least a quarter of our city to see what needs to be done and be responsive to the needs of the city." He estimated he worked 60 to 70 hours a week for what was officially a part-time job. "Accessibility is probably the most important thing that we have to offer as elected officials," he says. A man of strong convictions, Madrid often spoke on the importance of community inclusion and civic stewardship. Even after leaving office, he remained engaged by endorsing candidates, commenting on local issues in interviews and on social media, and also promised an autobiography at one time. Among his wins was helping other groups in the city. He was instrumental in keeping the pediatrics department at Grossmont Hospital open, says Allison Drew, who has been a pediatrics nurse for nearly 50 years. An environmental champion, Madrid was ahead of his time on sustainability, becoming the first mayor in San Diego to sign the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement and advanced drought resilience efforts long before it became a popular thing to do. Madrid founded the Environmental Sustainability Commission in 2008, despite other city council members not supporting it, and he called himself our region's first green mayor. His legacy also includes transformative civic projects, including revitalization of the downtown village, updating Fletcher Parkway, creating the La Mesa Walk of Fame to honor volunteers, championing the installation of accessible elevators at the San Diego Trolley Station at Grossmont Center through a federal grant, and guiding nearly $21 million into the city's general fund surplus. In 1997, a publisher of a racist internet newsletter left literature defaming Mexicans on the lawn and stuck it into the door of Madrid's home after he had denounced the spray painting of the La Mesa Community Center. Madrid likened the perpetrators to animals that come slithering out of rocks and spew their venom at night. He told the San Diego Jewish Press Heritage that one piece of literature was a caricature of a person depicted as a Mexican and a greasy, sloppy person who needed a shave. Previously, someone pasted a sign on his door with a swastika and a skull and bones. Mayor Madrid did have one scandal during his tenure when police officers responded to a 911 call in 2008 and found him inebriated on the sidewalk near his Ford Explorer, which was pulled over close to his East Ridge area home with an intoxicated city employee in the driver's seat. Madrid was not charged with any crime, and he weathered the controversy to win re-election. Former La Mesa City Council member Christina Licio, who started her service on the council in 2012, says she and Madrid initially butted heads over everything, but that as time went by, the two came to a mutual respect. She says Madrid stayed active in the community even after his time as mayor was over, including being an activist with Keep La Mesa Beautiful, which, among other things, stopped an initiative looking to place digital billboards along Interstate 8 near MacArthur Park. Alicia recalls that was probably his last big political push, stopping that digital billboard. That's something that future generations of La Mesans can be very thankful for, she says. Madrid was known for some bold initiatives. In 1994, he attracted national attention by pushing to publish the names and photographs of individuals arrested for prostitution, even putting names of Johns on billboards, which he said was aligned with a tough stance on community safety. Art Madrid is survived by three children and three grandsons. He was preceded in death by his son David Arthur Madrid, who passed in 1988 at age 18, and by his wife, Sally Lee Madrid, who died in 2003. His daughter Lisa says that less than a week before he passed away, Art Madrid visited David Madrid Field, a baseball diamond at the Lake Murray Little League Field at Sunset Park, dedicated since 2001 to David Madrid. He went there to check on a new sign honoring his late son. A celebration of Art Madrid's life will be held in July, with details to come. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is John Tidwell with a health alert. Over 1.7 million eggs have been recalled due to an outbreak of salmonella in multiple states, including California, according to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control. The August Egg Company, based in California, issued the recall of brown eggs, including cage-free and organic eggs, that were distributed under over two dozen brand names and sold through major retailers, including Walmart, Safeway, Food Max, Save Mart, Lucky, Smart and Final, Raley's, Food for Less, and Ralph's. The eggs had Best Buy dates as late as June 19th. The salmonella outbreak has sickened at least 79 people, including 21 who have been hospitalized. If you purchased brown eggs included in the recall, you can return it to the retailer for a refund. While most people recover from salmonella, severe cases may require hospitalization. The CDC reports that salmonella is a leading cause of foodborne illness, hospitalizations, and deaths in the United States and worldwide. About 1.35 million salmonella infections are reported every year in the U.S., according to the CDC.
Hunger amongst college students in California has jumped dramatically since the pandemic, yet CalFresh, a statewide low-income food assistance program, fails to reach more than 70% of eligible students. So, food pantries at colleges and universities are finding creative ways to meet student needs. In the 2023-24 school year, 46% of students at Cal Poly Humboldt used the school's Oh Snap food pantry, 4% more than the year before. Mira Friedman, who coordinates the program, says people may think that if students can afford tuition, they can afford food, but that's often untrue.
It's a misconception because oftentimes financial aid is not significant enough to pay for all the expenses. Food is very expensive, housing insecurity is very real, and food insecurity is very real for our students.
Data from the California Student Aid Commission found that more than two-thirds of college students surveyed were food insecure in 2023. Humboldt's OSNAP program offers cooking and gardening classes, sponsors a weekly farm stand with organic fruits and vegetables, and even has a pop-up thrift store with furniture and kitchen items. Students are also notified to pick up extra food from dining halls. Contra Costa College, a two-year school in San Pablo, recently launched a pilot program with 20 refrigerated lockers where students can pick up groceries they order online. Basic Needs Coordinator Hope Dixon says the program also helps students with CalFresh applications.
The eligibility requirements around CalFresh are incredibly challenging. I have a flowchart that helps students pre-review if they have some eligibility in order to apply. There's an interview, and students are often in classes if they miss the call. It's very, very hard.
Students who are on a school food plan only qualify for CalFresh if it is the most minimal plan. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Royalty Free Music, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.